If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this super awesome episode of the Mind Pump, in the first 15 minutes, you know, we have a lot of fun conversation. We talked about our first kisses. That was great. I talked a little bit about Adam's awesome outfit. He looks real nice today. Shaved off his beard to show off his wonderful cheeks.
Handsomeness.
Very nice. But then we get into talking about, ancient athletes. I brought up this article on some of the most decorated athletes of Greece and Rome, the sculptures, what they look like, why they looked the way they did, how they trained.
Men and women, which was cool.
Yes, really awesome. And then that got us into talking about training for full spectrum athletic performance, what that looks like, why it's so fun, and what kind of physique that produces. You know, like, think about this. If you went to the gym and stopped worrying about how you look, and all you worried about was, am I stronger? Am I faster? Am I more agile? Do I have better mobility? And can I get better stamina? If you only worried about those things, what do you think the side effect of that would be? Like, what do you think you would end up looking like? Imagine if you trained that way and you got really good at those physical attributes, you'd probably look awesome. And you'd look like somebody who could do all those things. Well, that's why we created Mass Performance. It was designed with performance in mind. The goal is to get you stronger. The goal is to get you more mobile, more agile, better reactive strength, more stamina. And the side effect of that is you look like a balanced individual. You've got good muscle, good development, awesome core strength, and of course, incredible performance. That program is 50% off, but there's only 4 days left for this promotion. So MAPS Performance right now, right this second, you can get for half off its normal price. If you go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and use the code GREEN50, GREEN50, you'll get 50% off, but you have to act quickly, because in 4 days, that promotion will be gone, and then the price of Mass Performance will be right back.
It's going to self-destruct.
Self-destruct. It'll go right back to its normal price. So make sure you go check that out now. I'm going to make a little compliment right now. Adam's looking really nice.
Yeah.
I've been holding it
you
in.
Know what my pajama pants?
Well, there's a lot of things you're doing today that look good.
It's like there's pajama pants, but it's like
golfing.
Okay, golf. I was gonna say like a handbag, you know, like a lady's
they're
handbag.
They're my Champion retro pants here.
Yeah. So you got the pants, which they look good. I'm not gonna lie, they look really good. Then you got the shirt and the hat, very nice combination. And then you revealed the face a little more.
Yeah, I shaved.
You know what's good about that?
Yeah, shave the beard.
Yeah,
shave the beard.
You are a handsome fellow.
You look happier, I feel like.
Well, I've accepted fat face currently. That's all part of my motivation to get in even better shape right now.
Bro, so. Your fat face is working for you now, dude. You officially look a lot younger than your age because of the chubs.
Younger and jollier. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, and I also wanted to, start to cut back slowly on the resistance in the water, you know?
Is that what you're doing for swimming?
So there's grades of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's levels. So I started the face, and we're going to get that. I got the cap going on and stuff like that. We're all taken care of, and then we'll eventually shave the
chest. You're putting the spoiler on?
Yeah.
This is for the down. This is for, to just give me a little bit of, your resistance down so I stick to the track.
Yeah.
What do they call that?
Pretty soon they'll be racing stripes.
Yeah.
You got to do all those things.
Anyway. No, I felt it was good for it's nice time for change. I've been rocking the beard for quite some time now. And sometimes it gets to be a pain in the ass, it gets into things and that's always annoying. So
it gets into things or things get into it?
No, it gets into things. Like if I'm going to eat something
like it's little tentacles.
Sometimes it gets, in the food and that's a pain in the ass. And then I'm messy. It's like,
when they do studies on beards, they do surveys, right? To find if what are women like? Do they like beards? Do they like clean shaven? And every survey I've read shows that women like really short beards for attractiveness. Mm. Okay. Long beards, they're less attracted to, but they say that the man looks more trustworthy. Like he's more like a father figure.
Of Santa Claus.
More like a father. Like, he's a trustworthy person because he's got a long beard.
Well, I think beards make you look crazier.
Yeah.
That's what I would think, too.
Osama bin Laden, you know? That's, come on. That's not very trustworthy.
I don't trust that son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch.
I would say that, America. Too. But no, they say that it does that. You know what's funny, too, is when you have kids, if you whatever your kids are used to, they don't like the opposite anymore. So when I first grew my beard, my daughter hated it.
Yeah.
And then now if I shave it, she doesn't like it. She wants me to grow it back now. Yeah. So I got to have
There's
it.
Definitely an optimal length. Mm-hmm. I've noticed, you know, in terms of me getting action. Like that's
direct correlation with the length of the beard.
If she feels any like tickling of it in, you know, if I give her a kiss or something, then it's like game off. Like it's dry season.
You guys do a lot of making out before you have sex. Is that what happens?
I'm kind of I'm a kissing guy.
Oh wow!
Oh really?
Yeah.
I
like to prime it with that.
I would have not guessed that you were a big makeout person.
You know, I always like try and sell it. She's not. So like I think that's probably why. I'm always like if it's something that I have to sell, I'm like more interested in it. Yeah. You know?
Do you go hard with like tooth, like the tongue right away?
I try really to hold back from that. I've been criticized a bit with you know, a bit too much of the meat coming in there. You know,
too aggressive, too early.
Too much tongue.
You got to just
Warm it up, bro.
Yeah. Just go lip
for
a while.
I've been working on it.
Got to warm it up slow.
Yeah. Do you, little light touches.
You guys remember, there's nothing
that's
light.
Straight to heavy.
You
can't go all in.
There's nothing about Justin that's light at all.
I know. It's
everything you do is full. Right now we're sitting here we're you know I give you guys waters and you're putting your you know nootropic powder the pure in there and just look down at the table. Can you tell which packet which packet was Justin?
Dude, I even had you like coaching me on it and I fucked it up.
Bro, you have two gears.
Yes. I do.
Sleep and juggernaut.
Reverse and fifth gear.
Yeah. Do you guys remember your first kisses and what those were like when you were God.
Like the first real kiss?
Yeah, with tongue and everything.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember it took like an hour to work up to it, right? Like I knew I was going to do it. I knew I was going over to my girlfriend's house. I was in 7th grade. 7th grade going into 8th grade. It was that summer.
Did your friends hype you up for it? Cuz mine I had like an entourage. All
before so the first like just little peck kiss? Yes. Like I remember that one too. And I remember the pressure from my friends. There was pressure at school about it, and your buddies telling you about. But when I went and did it, there was nobody around. It was just I was going over to her house.
And this was you had not made out with her yet.
Not at all. Nothing.
But you knew you were going to.
But I knew I was going to. Like it was the plan to go to her house. Which that's part exciting. Like I think that the friends on her side, you know, had talked to her about it. My friends have talked to me about it.
Oh.
The plan is I'm going over to do, I think, homework or some shit at your house, and we're gonna make, in quotes is right.
and did you make the move? She make the move? It was understood.
You know, it was kind of like it was like a note. Like what happened was we went over to her house, and then we went for a walk. You know, as the sun was going down, right? So it was getting darker, and we're out walking where we knew we'd be alone, and so. I remember walking with her, which probably felt like an eternity for me, you know, because I'm like mustering up the balls to like make a move, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think what I don't remember is if I said anything because I don't remember that part, but I do remember like stopping. But once we stopped and like looked at each other, it was like it was on, right? It was. I think I'm sure she had the same feeling as I did. Like we knew what we were here for. We knew what we're gonna.
So you're like 12. 12, 13.
I don't remember ages of what. Yeah, I think that's 12. What's 7th going into 8th grade?
I think it's like 12, 13.
Yeah.
Is it really that young?
Yeah.
Wow. I felt so much more mature.
Like 11 to 12 to get into 7th and then 12, 13 to 8th.
Bro, that's the age of painful boners. That's when it's too much.
You have to hide it in the belt.
Yeah, I remember that. But at that point, though, you're getting those, but I'm still at that point very scared to let her see that or touch that. You know what I'm saying? Like I just now mustered up enough, you know, balls to actually kiss her with my tongue.
All the energy, none of the wisdom.
Which the first time you kiss with your tongue is hilarious because it's like licking each other's faces. I mean, you just afterward you're like wiping it off.
Yeah, if I think back, I'm like, oh, that's weird and gross. Like there was a lot of times where we were trying to figure it out and it was just like so sloppy. Yeah, it's just like
isn't it
wrestling with your tongue?
Isn't it
bit.
Funny how we are as humans? Like that's not something you, at least most parents, I don't think, teach their kids. Like it's not something you're gonna have.
Do you know what the theory around
from,
that?
Like TV
yeah,
shows.
What is the theory?
The theory around that is you're actually tasting each other's to see if you're
compatible.
Yes,
I could see that.
That sounds worse.
It's first off, you get close enough to smell each other, and smell is extremely important. Pheromones still play a role in human sexuality, and then taste. You're literally tasting to see if you're suitable mates. If you should, and you're swapping bacteria, maybe even DNA.
They got some Doritos in there.
Yeah.
There's even that guy.
There's even hormones present.
This guy's first kiss.
I had a snack.
He just made some nacho fucking cheese Dorito
chips.
Imagine
you get all like over
dude,
your face.
Fucking did that, bro. I know.
But I still got. I still got first base.
I was the kid who was like, I had the banaca. What was that? What it was? I had the banaca in the pocket. I brushed my teeth before I went over there.
You're all prepared.
Yeah, Justin just fucking slammed a bag of Doritos.
I just went for it.
Yeah. He had the chili cheese flavored Frito chips.
Hey, baby.
Yeah. Maybe she liked it.
Give me a salty
she's
kiss.
She's hungry.
Yeah. Before he kisses her, he's like, hey, listen, you want some of these Fritos? And she's like, yeah. And you're like, I ran out. Yeah. However, you can still taste
you
them.
Taste it?
So gross. So my first kiss was eighth grade, and it was this. I hadn't kissed anybody yet, or made out with anybody, and there was this girl who I won't say her name because it's mean, but everybody knew
Sarah.
That.
No. I don't know, just guessing.
Everybody knew that she just would make out with people. Like she was the girl.
She was the girl that she was the slut in junior high.
Yeah, terrible. Right? I don't want to say that. It's terrible.
Let's be honest. You're not having sex then. So no. Girls, this is true though.
Yeah.
Okay. You're not saying her name.
The village bicycle of kissing.
When you're that young, there's still the stigma of being a slut still goes around.
It's true. And it was given to her by. I mean, girls would say that. But anyway, so I was friends with her and we were cool. And so I told her, hey. I literally talked to her about it. I'm like, do you want to?
Yeah, like I need practice.
We should make out, and she's like, okay. And so we went into where were we? It was break, and we snuck into one of the classrooms, and it was a band room. And in the band room, there was the closet to go into the equipment was. So we went in there and just made out, and then it stopped because I grabbed a boob. So I moved a little too quickly.
Oh, she halted
it. Jumped the gun.
Yeah, right. I grabbed the boob a little bit, and then she kind of moved my hand away, and then I was like, oops, and then we stopped.
Wait a second. Your first kiss, you went first kiss, tongue, and you went boob the same time?
Yeah.
Whoa, bro. Yeah, telling Justin he's aggressive.
You're excited.
You're like barely, you haven't even hit.
It was automatic. It was in my
You know
hand.
Who you are? You're the guy who hits a single. Everybody in the park knows it's a single. You try and stretch it to
he's
a
running.
Double.
He's running. And the coach is like, no.
Yeah, he's like, hold.
Stay.
Hold. And you're like, no, I can turn this into a double.
No.
And they got a slight hit first.
And they got the ball. And they're just waiting for you to get to the second.
No, I kind of moved my hand up, and then she left it there for like a good 4 seconds. And I was like, oh. And then she like kind of gently put her hand on mine and kind of moved it down a little bit. And then I got the hint like, oh, shit, she's like that. And then I was like, let's leave.
This is awkward.
Yeah, oops. I messed up. But, dude, we went. I mean, you again, at that age, you make out and it's hard. It's like a hard make out. It's like you think that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah,
you don't
learn. For like way too long. Yeah. Like
yeah. You just that's keep all
going.
You do.
Yeah, like, until you're like dry. All you know, in the mouth. Like, oh my God, it's been a while. Until
she eats all your Fritos.
Yeah. I'm hungry again. Let's go find some food.
That is disgusting. Anyway, I'm going to change the subject. So
thank you.
I sent this link to Doug so he could post it up on the TV. What a great article that
Risperus or Magra? What is that?
Okay, so I was up late last night and I wanted to look up ancient athletes, like famous ancient athletes. Because you know the Romans and the Greeks kept record of some of the athletic exploits that some of their gladiators did or their athletes. And the Greeks in particular celebrated athletic prowess.
How far back are we talking right now?
Bro, these are thousands of years ago. Like here, I'll read one of them. Right,
there's records of them.
Yes,
awesome.
There's records of them on pottery or on walls, sculptures, writings. So the first one on the list is Orsippus of Megara, who's an ancient Greek athlete who won the Stadion race of the 15th ancient Olympic Games. This is the 15th one ever. So this is in 720 BC. And he was a pioneer. You want to know why? He was the first athlete to run naked.
What?
Yeah. So it was like a thing that he. So he. This was written in the. There was a guy, a famous guy who would report on the ancient Olympics. And so this is what he said. He says, my own opinion is that at Olympia, he, referring to Orsippus, intentionally let the girdle slip off him, realizing that a naked man can run more easily than one with wearing a one of these things. So then all the athletes afterwards started to wear. But what I like about this is you look at the sculptures.
There's freedom in that.
And you can see the way that these athletes are built. So the one that Doug has up right now, these are all runners, right? And sprinters. Like, what do you notice about these?
Oh, massive big quads.
Look at those
small
things.
Waist.
Yeah, yeah, look at their at their hamstrings and their glutes, you know, for the power. Then there was another one, Verizdat, who was an athlete from Armenia who won the Olympic boxing tournament during the 291st Olympic Games. And you can see the
drawings. Oh, wow. They actually had like a wrist like tape or something wrapped around their hands, huh?
Well, they would hit each other and they would cover their hands in leather. Mm. That was the gloves that they would wear. And it was to protect their hands.
Because
if anybody's ever, you know, you've ever hit a face with your bare fist, you typically hurt yourself.
You're going to hurt yourself, yeah.
But again, look at the bodies on these sculptures. And you can see, like, with the boxers. That's what I was liking. I was looking at the different athletes and what they look like.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Look at the core muscles.
Like, even back then, and they're carving in stone and doing shit, like, you can still see the detail of what they're trying to convey in the
nice glutes.
Back then, and we're talking, again, thousands of years ago, in ancient Armenian royal and these aristocratic families, physical education of youngsters was a big deal. It was disciplined. It was something that was a part of your character building. These kids were taught swimming, boxing, wrestling, weightlifting, and military exercises. And he was one of these aristocrats who then competed as a boxer and would win. Then they have, on this list, they have Seneca of Sparta, who rode the chariot. Do you guys know that the chariot racers were like some of the most dangerous sport you could do?
Now, was it back then, was it similar, like we look at, like, what are they called? What are jockeys, right? The little, they're so light and small. Like, was it, do you think it was advantageous guys to be little? Or
no, the mentality back then was that the ideal, and this lasted, by the way, for a long time. This lasted up until the early 20th century, right? Where we thought the ideal athlete for any sport was a balanced athlete. And I think that's because of the tradition of these Olympic sports, where these were soldiers, these were these were all they weren't professional athletes, although they did have professional athletes. But really, it was about being this balanced individual who could do all these different things. Mm. Of course, later on, we figured out that
there's advantages based off of body types, all these types of
things. Yeah, if you're tall, basketball; if you're short, being a jockey. But the chariot was crazy. So what was crazy about this particular athlete, Seneca, was that it was a woman.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, so men were the only ones allowed to compete for a long time, but then it changed, and then women started competing, and she was the first person to win the games, and she did so with a four-horse chariot, and she had a male team that helped her with this. But chariot racing was extremely dangerous. They would fucking die all the time. So they go so fast, they fall off.
Yeah, half of it was her just having to control all four of those at once.
Yes.
And then those sharp pin turns. What was the most dangerous part? Was it the wheels would fall off and they'd smash in the ground?
All of it, because it's like, think about it as race car driving, like high speed race car driving, how dangerous that is. Like, a lot of people don't realize that that's one of the more dangerous sports, is when you're, doing, Formula One or what's it called here in the U.S.? The
NASCAR.
Mm-hmm. It can be quite dangerous. We have a lot of safeties and stuff, but you're pushing the limits. And these chariots were pushing the limits of speed at the time and handling. Mm-hmm. And so, if they crashed or you fell out, I mean, you're going 40, 50 miles an hour. Not a seatbelt, helmet, none of that shit.
I was gonna say,
and then horses are going to stomp you.
We've evolved quite a bit on the safety side of things with roll cages, ambulance radios. They probably didn't have a lot of that shit back then.
Yeah, I highly doubt that.
It's pretty crazy. And there's a lot of stuff that's, that's in there that's like myth, like certain athletes, like, oh, this person also killed a lion. They don't know if that was true or not. I like personally looking at the boxers and the wrestlers. And then there was another sport called... I think it was called pancration or pancreas, where it was a no holds barred, anything goes fighting sport.
Oh, wow.
So you could do anything, I believe, except for bite or eye gouge. And when I was in, where did I go where I saw this sculpture? Oh, it was in France. I went to the Louvre Museum. You guys ever been to Louvre?
Mm-hmm.
Louvre Museum?
Yeah.
Oh, spectacular. Anyway, there was a whole section with these sculptures, and I remember there was this one tablet with a sculpture of an athlete who was in you know, one of the champions of that sport, and he was doing this like wrestling move that I had learned like a month prior in jiu-jitsu. It was really cool to see, like, oh, this is thousands of years ago. They were doing the same kind of shit
that
we're doing now. But again, when you scroll through and you look at the pictures of these athletes, like these sculptures and these paintings, their bodies are, I mean, incredible, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to see, too, like how, you know, certain ones, like the boxing, you see definitely the core was very pronounced in their back. And but, yeah, you see that because they had to – I mean, they had to perform. They had to be able to, like, produce power. And so they have these, like, big legs and big core and big glutes, you know, to really help propel them and help with their performance.
Yeah. Milo is one of the more famous ones. You guys have heard of Milo before, right? That name is thrown around a lot for strength sports. And this was this is what they had in writing. And if you look at that sculpture of him. I mean, remember, this is before protein powder. This is before creatine. You know what I'm saying?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit before.
Yeah, yeah. This is before.
Are you kidding me?
Before traditional weight training. Yeah. I mean, look at the guy's build. You know, in these sculptures, he looks fucking. And so, what they wrote about him, they said that he was super intimidating, very strong guy. He was one of the winningest wrestlers and fighters of his time. He was said to eat more than 8 kilos of meat every day. So this is what's
there you go.
So that's like 17, 18 pounds of meat. I don't know how true that is, but apparently he was a massive muscular guy that was just undefeated.
That's a lot of meat, dude.
That is a lot of meat.
They also said that, and this is all legend, so we don't know if this is true or not, but he carried a bowl on his shoulders.
Oh, that's the Milo. The Milo story where he carried a young calf up the hill every day.
Until it became a bull, which is the first.
I remember that legend.
Has anyone tried to do that yet? I feel like somebody's had to try to do that.
How the hell would you carry a bowl?
There's probably a guy on YouTube now documenting it.
Like, literally, if you were to do that, right? Like, from every single day, carry them like that.
You know what's fascinating about that writing?
You would adapt for a while.
You don't want to feed them corn because it's going to get big.
Yeah. The reason why it's fascinating is because that's the first recorded evidence of the concept of resistance training in terms of adding resistance as you get stronger. Because that's really what that was about. Right. Was about whether it was true or not.
Yeah,
it was a story of a boy carrying a
progressive
calf.
Progressive overload.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the first recorded evidence of that, and it's pretty. That's why. So Milo, that the name is used for.
That's where
sports
that name. I was like, I know I've heard that somewhere too. It's from that story.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, in those times and for a long time, an athlete in any given sport, what they would consider the ideal was just kind of this balanced individual who was well developed, who could do lots of different physical pursuits.
Well, like you said too, I think soldiers were the superstars of the day, you know, like they were the ones that were most revered, and so they had to have all these different attributes because their life, it was threatened otherwise. Like, they had to be able to throw and to be able to move like at the turn of a hat. Like, they had to be able to have all these abilities. So, I mean, it was life or death. And so for people to see how they train for that, or like how they go out to battle, I think was very interesting to people.
Well, the thing it makes me think about is when I think about the times of my life when I truly felt my best, like just physically felt my absolute best, it was when I was doing training in different physical pursuits, when I had the ability to. So it wasn't extreme in any one of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been extremely muscular for my, you know, for my shape and size and genetics. I've also had lots of endurance at certain points. But when I felt my best, it was when I had the ability to perform relatively well in kind of all of them. I just feel the healthiest. I felt like, because my body could express itself in all these physical pursuits. You know, when I was doing jiu-jitsu, I felt like I was like that. I had the stamina from jiu-jitsu. There were, you know, at least a couple days a week where I would do track work and I would do things like sprints and stuff like that. I started incorporating plyo a little later on. I always lifted weights. I never stopped lifting weights. My flexibility training at the time, I would use things like yoga, and then the jiu-jitsu was good for flexibility. And I just felt physically good. Now, the way I looked, I wasn't this huge muscular dude. I wasn't this, you know, small, skinny, you know, endurance type of person. I just had a very balanced kind of physique.
Well, you're building muscle, you know, to use it, you know, at that point. And I think that's where my mindset has always been. And I know that, you know, it can kind of veer more, like you start really noticing the change in your body. And so that can be alluring for a lot of people, like, wow, look at what it's doing. And then you go more heavily at how I can enhance the effects of that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the actual original, like, pursuit of building muscle to, you know, do these types of sports or work activities, like, all around the world, you see people that need to build muscle because they have really grueling work, laborious jobs that they have to do. And so that they became sports because of, like, these types of, like, workloads that they had.
Well, the truth is they all carry, or they all feed into each other, and they all take away from each other. And the more that you put, the more energy you put into one training modality or specialty, the more it's going to take away from the other things, right? And mm-hmm. so learning to somehow diversify your training focus is, I think, so ideal. And I think it's a very common thing that we see amongst just average gym goers, that we gravitate towards one that we specifically love and like. And it's normally the ones that we perform well. So that feeds into that even more. So it's like, oh, wow, I found this way of training, whether it be CrossFit or whether it be strength training, like for a powerlifter, or whether it be like a bodybuilder, where whatever it is for you, or like an athlete where you're doing plyo mm-hmm. stuff. There's something that we all tend to kind of gravitate towards because we are naturally good at it, or we enjoy it, or it gave us the most results at that time. And then we end up marrying that, and we spend so much time in that modality that as we get better and better at that, it starts to take away more and more from the other modalities and other ways that your body can express itself. And one of the best things that we could always do, and I think I say this on the show all the time, is whatever you're not currently doing right now. It's like we all tend to do this, and I'm still guilty of this, and this is the type of shit that I'll have these weird moments where I'm like, I'm going to swim. Why? Because I don't. You know, and I haven't in fucking forever. And I've never put a bunch of energy towards that to see what kind of carryovers mm-hmm. it leads into everything else. Like, I always love to do that. And I'm very aware that I fall into that, which, and I know a lot of people just ignore it, or they're in denial, you know, or, oh, I'm like a bodybuilder, and so I only train this way. It's like, well, that's so ridiculous that you're not taking advantage of these, all these other ways to train the body. It's only going to benefit you, not just how it expresses itself, but also how it looks too. There's so many carryovers you get by
the way. First off, celebrating someone's muscular appearance, there were definitely, you know, hints of it throughout history, but it really didn't become a thing until the mid 20th century. Mm-hmm. Up until that point, it was about what
Eugene
you could do.
Eugene Sandow, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was the one that really kind of popularized that, because he had the bronze cast made of his body because he was a specimen.
Right, right. And up until, I mean, for a long time, even bodybuilding shows involved some kind of physical, you know, representation. Like, you'd have to go out and do handstands or do a lift or something like that. And then later, and then another round, they would look at you. And it was Weider and those guys that kind of, you know, took all that stuff out, and it became all about just the appearance. But you have to ask yourself why we find a muscular physique nice to look at. We're like, what is the purpose of that? And the reason why
do we like it, period? Why are we drawn to it, both male and female?
Right. Like, why do we like it? And it's because it represents
health
and it represents function. And what we've done is we've identified the aspects of the physical, the physical human physique that we like, and then we try to exaggerate them. So a lean, healthy, strong, functional man tends to have a nice shoulder to waist ratio. And of course, we try to make that extreme by shrinking the waist as much as possible, building the shoulders out as much as possible. But when you look at an athlete that's lean, that's strong, let's say a wrestler or a boxer, they have well-developed obliques. In mm-hmm. fact, you look at all these sculptures, these Greek sculptures, and these sculptors were mirroring what they saw in these competitors and these athletes and gladiators. And if you look at their bodies, you'll see the muscles they put emphasis on. They had incredible looking core muscles, especially the obliques. They had definitely strong legs and hips, but they weren't these huge bulging quads. They were just these nice, strong legs. They had great looking shoulders. They had defined chests, but not these huge boob pecs that you see in a lot of bodybuilder, you know, lifters. They had very muscular and strong backs. That was a very big one, especially the mid.
They also
and lower
have strong looking hands and forearms too.
Yes, mm-hmm. strong hands and forearms. And when you look at athletes and people that can really fucking move, male and female, you notice these. I can always tell if somebody really has the kind of real world strength that you kind of like, oh shit, that's something you need to look out for by looking at their hips, their back, and their hands. Those are like the three areas you could tell right yeah. away. You can see like if somebody's muscular but they've got weak looking hips, no glutes, their back is shallow.
Obliques, yeah,
their obliques are small or whatever. You're like, okay, they lift weights in the gym, but they probably aren't really super functional or super strong. And so training your body for function, here's the thing. If you train your body for aesthetics, you might get some aesthetics depending on how you do it, and you'll get some improvements in function. But sometimes just training for aesthetics can drive you in the wrong direction and you get neither. Training for function, when you do it right, like when you're measuring your performance, am I stronger? Can I move faster? Am I able to move in different directions? That always results in improvement in aesthetics.
I also feel it extends the longevity of a little bit more of that extreme look. Like in terms of like being able to add on top of like being like just focusing on the aesthetics of it, and there are tricks and there's ways to you sort of get you there a little bit quicker in terms of like shrinking your waist and mm-hmm. You know, puffing your chest up and getting bigger arms and but as a side effect to that, you know, sometimes, you know, this could accelerate joint pain. This could add more pressure in weak points of your body that now you've, you know, sculpted and brought to a point where, you know, physique wise, it looks like it mimics, what this like ultimate strong, you know, able-bodied physique mm-hmm. looks like. But, you know, really the infrastructure isn't there. The foundation isn't there underneath it. And where if we add the function to it, and then we also still want the look of it and the physique, the ultimate physique look of it, you know, we need to still build on that base.
When I first became a trainer, my early days of training were focused on changing how they looked. And that's how I would communicate my training. Later on, and by the client's goals never changed. It was always everybody comes in and sees me because they want to change how they look. That's just right. the most common, the common goal. But later on, I would change the way I communicate to helping them move better. So I'd say things like, we need to practice your squats. We need to get better at your squats. I want to see better control here. I want to see, okay, look at your strength. Wow, you're able to go deeper here. Now we can do behind the neck exercises, whereas before you couldn't. And they actually had better results. They would always have better results. And I think part of it is they would come to the gym, and rather than thinking, today I need to hammer my legs, because I was communicating in a particular way, they'd come in and be like, okay, I want to get better at my squats. I want to get better at my squats. And it just resulted in better results. And I think it's because the attitude was different. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like they wouldn't come in.
Well, we've talked about this all the time, that exercise is a skill. Mm-hmm. And that's how you would treat any other sport. You would want to practice that skill before you really get after anything. I think all of us trainers figured that out at one point when you've been training long enough that, man, if I just starve these people of calories and run them on a treadmill or do these things, sure, I could get this weight loss, but to fundamentally change these people forever long term. And what I started to realize too was that most of the people that actually could afford personal training that were training with me were 35 and above, successful, you know, had kids, aches and pains, and the belly. It's like, I have this body, my body fat's higher than it's ever been. I'm not happy with that. I don't like the way I look. I want to change that. My back hurts. My knees hurt. My shoulders hurt. All these things are bothering them. And when I get them to focus on the moving better and eliminating all the joint pain, and that the body would come as a byproduct of working on those things, and got them to focus more on that, like, how's the shoulder feeling mm-hmm. today? Oh, how are the hips feeling today? Because those things are really easy to move the needle fast. Like, if you have somebody who has a lot of dysfunction in their body, they sit at a desk all day long, they're really gotten out of shape for the last 1 to 3 to 5 plus years, and you get them as a trainer and they come working out, like, sure, I could cut a bunch of calories, run them on a treadmill, and they can lose some weight over the course of weeks. But if I get them down and I actually start to get them reconnected to their body that they have been disconnected from for so long, and that's what's causing a lot of these, the joint pain, the bursitis, and all these aches, that this nagging shit that they didn't have 10, 15 years ago, I can start to make that right away change and feel different. And then you help them communicate, explain that to them, like, listen, I know you wanted to lose 30 pounds and that was the main reason why you hired me right now. But if we put our energy and focus on moving better and feeling better,
30 pounds will come off.
It'll come off. And it was awesome because it kind of distracted them from that.
That's what I mean. It was a change. It's funny, as you're talking, I remember it wasn't that long ago that if someone had bad knees or a bad back or a bad shoulder, that we would say, okay, we can't do these exercises.
So true.
You know, like they would literally come in and they'd hire you and you'd be like, okay, do you have any, you know, as part of your assessment, right? Do you have any injuries, aches or pains? Oh yeah, my right knee, I have arthritis in it. It hurts when I bend it beyond 90 degrees and I have lower back issues. And then as a trainer, you'd be like, okay, we're not squatting, we're not lunging, we're not doing any deadlifts and we're not doing any bent over rows. Later on, I realized, no. If I want them to get better, the best possible thing I could do is get them to the point
towards it
to be able to do those things. And then when we would do them, it's so crazy. I had a lady that was responsible for a good 20% of my referrals. So I was having this conversation with Jessica last night. You know, when you become a trainer, if you do it long enough and you do a good job, at some point, you know, I don't care how many clients you've had, 100 clients, there's like 6 clients that end up sending you all your clients. Like you get those champions for you that end up sending you all. And I had one like that, and she was a surgeon, brilliant woman. And when she came to hire me, she said to me just very bluntly, she's like, I can't do lunges and I can't do squats. I have bad knees. So those are the things I can't do. And I remember thinking like, okay, I'm going to have to convince this woman that those things are going to be good for her and that we're going to move her towards that. And so I did. I had these conversations with her, and she's an intelligent person. And so she would, you know, kind of trust me. And little by little, we got to the point where we were doing lunges and squats and all these different exercises, and her knees didn't bother anymore. And she ended up referring so many different people to me, but it was all because we focused on the function. Of course, you know, through that process, ended up losing weight and changing how she looked. And the other thing too about working out in a way that is really focused on movement, most people don't realize it. It's more fun.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's therapeutic for me.
It's more fun. The average client, this is why people like to do the stupid, you know, crazy workouts in classes where they're jumping around and they're doing, you know, where there's no structure. People like it because it's fun. Mm-hmm. When you go to the gym just to change how you look, okay, today I got to do a little bit of biceps, a little bit of triceps, a little shoulder. The average person tends to get bored. The average person has a lot of fun, though, when it's like movements. Like, okay, we're going to work on lateral movements. Today we're going to do, I'm going to teach you how to explode. Today we're going to focus on just strength. People tend to have a lot of fun with that. And so those kinds of workouts are just enjoyable. They're just more enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, it shifts the focus. I'm going through this right now. I don't know. You might have left, Sal, by this time, but yesterday I had Justin working with me on working on my snatch.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's it.
How's the snatch?
You set me up for that.
I did.
That was an underhand pitch.
It smells great. But I, you know, I've just now got to a point where I can do an overhead squat. Like, that's never been in my exercises ever. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it before. I couldn't even get a squat assegrass, much less holding a barbell over
my
head.
Are you getting sore in different areas? Like, what do you feel?
Oh, yeah.
Where are you feeling
crazy? Oh, my whole upper back feels crazy right now. So,
and the side effect is probably going to be more muscle in your upper back.
Yeah, it's crazy to watch because, again, like watching you go through that whole progression of just getting like depth in your squat and then, you know, solidifying that, you know, new range of motion, and then, you know, working that up the kinetic chain up to the shoulders. Now the shoulder mobility is there, and then you start working on the, you know, the overhead squats, and now this is going to be like the pinnacle of all of that work, which is, you know, it's cool to see. And it's now it's about like really being able to control not just the strength element of and stability of it. Now we have to move quickly and stabilize and be loose when you need to be loose and be tight when you need to be tight. So it's a whole new thing.
And what I've shared some pictures, but man, I've been going for a couple months yet now, and I haven't gone any heavier than what you've seen, because when I go in to do this every time, I'm not trying I'm not measuring my success off of how I look or how, where my weight is. It's like the perfection of the movement. Mm-hmm. And like, so it's actually very therapeutic for me going to the gym right now, not concerned about those things.
It's fun.
Like, yeah, it's like, this is all I'm looking at. Like, I want to stick the landing. I want to be comfortable in that position. I want to feel the ground evenly distributed on my feet. Like, I'm thinking about that. And what's been great is, I was so far away just a year or two ago from even being able to perform it, to just be able to perform it now. And there's plenty of little things that I know isn't perfect. And so every time I'm going into it, it's more about that. I really feel like if we would all work on our movements, like squatting, deadlifting, overhead pressing, some of these major lifts that have the biggest bang for your buck, if we treated it like that more often, I think that a lot of people would see some serious benefit versus letting our egos get in the way and thinking about what the guy next to me is doing or what my buddy is pressing because he's up, he's bench pressing 315 and I'm barely doing 185. It's like, that's why I don't like partners, because it fucks with your head like that. Even me, like, I don't want to go practice my movement when I'm working with a workout partner. He wants to lift as heavy as he can and push as hard as we can, and I'm going to feed off that energy. It's like, but that's not necessarily what's probably best for my body. What's best for my body right now is, I have a goal right now to get to this point where I have incredible ankle mobility, incredible hip mobility, incredible shoulder and thoracic mobility, and I've busted my ass to get to this point. And now I'm trying to learn a move that expresses all of it at once so I can keep that in my routine.
And I love that you brought this up, because like, this is why I have so many reserves when people start talking about power moves or Olympic lifting in general. Because
they don't treat it like a skill.
It's like a sacred thing to me. Like, it's something where you're telling me that you've spent all those years of work on your body. You're so in tune with your body, strength-wise and stability-wise, and your mobility is in a place where your range of motion is, you know, further than your average person, to where I can express this movement in a fluid fashion. It looks pretty. Like, there's a lot of nuances once you get up to that pinnacle of where power is the expression of all of those things, you know, harmoniously. It's a symphony versus like just, you know, watching some garage band, you know? So for me, I just, that all has to, you know, it all leads into that ultimate apex.
This reminds me of when we, all of us got together, this is early, right? Early Mind Pump. And we all went off to create the first program that we would all create together. You know, MAPS Anabolic, I had written, you know, before. Then we all got together and we wanted to write a program together. I was excited because I had respected, I respect the hell out of you guys and your guys' skill. And also the fact that your guys' skill level is different than mine in many different ways. So I knew that I was going to learn a few things, and plus the fun aspect of sitting down and writing something. And what we came up with was, we wanted to come up with a program for, based on performance. And I remember us sitting there thinking, like, because performance is a word that's used all the time, right? And so we're like, okay, what do we mean by performance? Like, there's so many different types of performance, so many different types of athletes. A basketball player is different than a football player, is different than a swimmer and a runner. And so we were all sitting there, and I don't know if you guys remember, but I don't know who it was. I think it might have been me who was like, you know what? Let's base this program off of what the Greeks considered the ultimate athlete, the ancient athlete, what the person who could do all these different things, someone who could do this full spectrum of athletic performance. And that was a lot of fun. And we sat down, and then I remember we had to list out, this is just the process that we go through. We're like, okay, let's list the different attributes that we need to train for.
Right.
And we came up with, it was max strength. Mm-hmm. That was the first one, right?
Yep.
Then it was, what was it? It was reactivity.
Yeah, which reactive strength. Which is basically proprioception, which is basically moving in multiple planes, multiple directions.
Yeah, multiple.
Strength.
Yes, yes. And then there was power.
Yep.
Being able to explode.
Yeah.
And then there was stamina.
There's stamina.
And if you think about it, if you're thinking about a person who can do, if you're picturing like, okay, a person who can run, jump, lift, twist, bend, have lots of like all these different attributes, those are the four.
Right, with control, and then how to express that with power.
All of it. Those are the four.
Yeah.
Like if you could create an athlete that had all four of those things and had them all mastered, you'd have a badass on your hands. You'd have someone that you could put in any sport or do anything. And then, of course, we talked about like what that person what ended up looking like. And it was fun creating that program because then, you know, when we wrote each of those phases, like, okay, now we're going to, and then we had to order them. Like, which one do we train first? Which one do we end with? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we decided that this would be a program that people could use off season and then lead into a season. So we thought, okay, stamina would probably be the last thing then. Mm-hmm. And we'd want to build the base first would be the strength and then, you know, move from there. It was fun creating those because creating maximal strength for a specific sport is different than trying to create general maximal strength.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we had to do that and put that all together in the agility aspect. It was a blast.
It was awesome. And you see how, you know, we dealt with load and how, you know, max strength, you know, applying max strength, we want to really like challenge that with load and then how we sort of lighten the load because now we're expressing new movements that we need to get strength in and support in. And then, you know, even lighter on that for the full expression of power, we want to see, you know, the kinetic chain like fully get involved and we want to see how quickly and how explosively you can get into these movements.
So when I was a kid, I was a huge comic book fan, and I really liked a few characters. It was, you know, the Incredible Hulk was one, Thor, and the other one was Spider-Man. And I remember when we were creating this, we were thinking of like trying to think of an avatar, and the one that kept popping up into my mind was Spider-Man. Because when you read the comic books, Spider-Man's strong, he's got stamina, but then you see him like jump and twist and get into these weird flexible, mobile positions where he's like, you ever seen this picture of Spider-Man where he's like shooting web between his legs or he's upside down or whatever? And that's how, when we started coming up with the mobility sessions. Like, how are we going to get people to be able to have all these attributes, but then expand upon them so they can move in all these different ways? Because however awesome your strength is, if you move outside
it's
of
limited.
Where you, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's 100% limited by what your joints can support and stabilize. So keeping that in mind, like it really doesn't do you a whole lot of good to be able to have this like this battery, this supercharged battery that I could access and deliver the most, you know, crazy amount of power to. But where are you delivering it if there's cracks, you know, in the link?
Well, this happens all the time to people who think that they're really fit, people who work out all the time. And you'll hear these stories where, oh, you know, I work out all the time. It was really weird. But, you know, I reached back and behind the car, my daughter called out for me or whatever. I twisted, boom, my back went out. Or I went to the beach and I was throwing a frisbee with my son and now my shoulder's fucked. And these are very fit people. And really what ended up happening is they were just moving and trying to express speed and power and strength outside of where they had control. So think about this. If you're listening right now and you're thinking like you have a pretty good squat, and let's say your squat max is, I don't know, 300 pounds. Let's say you're a man and you're like, oh, I could squat 300 pounds and I've got I'm pretty strong. Just go 2 inches lower and see how strong you are. Actually, don't test that because you'll hurt yourself.
Yeah, that's probably not good.
You go 2 inches lower and you're fucked. You're 2 inches. That's it. 2 inches is nothing. So however strong you think you are, move outside of where you have control and you become a hazard to yourself. You actually lose strength. And if you try
a new movement.
It becomes a new movement. And so what mobility work does and why it's so valuable is it's trying to increase the capability of that strength that you have, that function, that it's actually making you more functional in that sense. So it's great that you have all that strength, but how long can you express it? What ranges of motion can you express it in? When you expand upon that, reduces your risk of injury tremendously, but even better, you perform. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can fucking move in the real world, and I think that's what, and I know the word functional has been perverted in our space, it's been abused for so long, but that's, in my opinion, what functional really means. It's like, how strong are you, and how strong are you in all these different ranges of motion? How fast are you in all these ranges of motion? How much control do you have?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, this is one of the, I mean, this, first of all, it's our baby, right? Because when you think about it, you created MAPS Anabolic before anything, but this is the first thing that we all created together.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we took a lot of pride in everything that we do, but you know, we hashed out a lot in this, and this is probably one of the more extensive programs because of the creativity of including
the mobility work days within it and trying to complement everything that we were working on within the program. So it has the most phases. It's got some of the most workouts and most exercises.
Does it have the most exercises in there? I think it does, right?
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of movements that are not traditional in it as
right.
well.
Yeah. It was definitely a lot of critical thinking went into building that. And I tell you what, man, I love
you followed it.
Yeah, no, it was definitely one of the things. It was perfect timing for me. I've tried to incorporate everything that we've done, or that we've written into my own personal journey. And that one was easy for me to incorporate because it was a current focus of mine. After competing, I was heading in this direction of becoming more mobile, and it just made sense to train like that and use the program that we created. And it was a game changer for me. And I tell anybody that asks me about it and my process through it, it's like, listen, this is one of those programs that I guarantee you if you just follow it, like, but you got to stick to it. You have to put the work in. You got to do the mobility days. Like you can't just do it like trying to
you
do
can't
the
just do the workouts.
Yeah, which is fine. It's great. It's still a good workout. But the game changer is, in my opinion, is the mobility days that we created to complement the training that you were doing. Because if you actually do follow this entire thing for that, 12-week process, by the time you finish this thing, holy shit, you will feel amazing. You know,
I look at it too, like with anabolic, in terms of how we challenged what most people like that go to the gym, and their current program that they're in, that program really helped to challenge the capacity for them to generate power and utilize their CNS and really like stretch the capacity in that fashion. Whereas, with performance, it's really stretching the capacity for movement potential. And so I'm now going to take this new attribute into, if I wanted to now express building upon that and building upon my body and my physique, this is why we kind of put them in order of now, aesthetic would be a great follow-up for that if now I want to, really enhance the look of what I've built.
Oh, you build a base off this. And what's cool about it, because it was entirely focused on like full spectrum human performance, the type of the muscles and the areas of the body that end up getting a lot of focus are the hips, the legs, the back. You get a lot of shoulder and upper back work in this program because those are the areas that really carry the brunt of human performance and movement. That's what you end up finding. You end up finding at the end of this program like this, like I've had a few power lifters do MAPS performance and a few competitors who, I've actually worked with them through the whole program, and they're just like, the powerlifters are like, man, my squats feel way more solid. Mm-hmm. My core is in powerlifters sometimes neglect really working their core. They're like, my stability when I deadlift and squat is through the roof. And then the competitors are just like, I didn't realize I'd build legs and delts and upper back off of a program like this. I'm like, well, yeah, those are the areas of the body that if you're fucking moving and you're expressing power and speed and all this, those are the areas
it's
that get a lot of work
for that.
That's where you see it all. So anyway, program I'm very proud of creating with you guys. It was probably one of the more fun ones. This article of these ancient athletes really just reminded me of it because as I'm looking, I've always been fascinated by these old sculptures and what these sculptors considered to be the ideal human physique and how much of that has changed and how much of it hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's changed now is we've just gotten more extreme with the plastic and all that stuff. But what hasn't changed is if you take one of these sculptures of these ancient athletes and you turn them into a real person today and they were walking around, they'd be just as freaking impressive as they were.
No fake butts back then.
Yes, they were real. I mean, Milo and Hercules, those sculptures, you ever see the asses on those guys?
They got some glutes. Yeah. I'm going to tell you that
right now. They could drive with those bad boys. Yeah. Anyway, with that, go to mindpumpfree.com and check out our free guides. We got a lot of guides on there. They're absolutely for free. Some of them teach you how to build your arms, your legs, your core. There's even one for personal trainers. You want to be a successful trainer? There's a guide on that too. Again, it's mindpumpfree.com. And you can also check out our individual social media pages on Instagram. Justin can be found at mindpumpjustin. My page is mindpumpsal, and you can find Adam at mindpumpadam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy,
and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.